The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You are on the line with Uncle T-Bone, not Jacob Goins. How about that for Eclipse Day, folks? Jacob Goins is out today on location in Augusta at the Masters. Can't be reporting live like we asked him to. No cell phones over there, but he is walking those hallowed grounds and taking it all in. So welcome aboard to On the Line, the show that tells it like it is and holds nothing back. Yours truly, Uncle T-Bone, will be with you from 2 to 4 o'clock. Got some Jack Hudden in the studio today. Intern Allen's running the show, so he may jump in as well. 334-321-1390. And I guess there's a lot to talk about, Jack. I mean, you know, I don't know, the Final Four, 8A, Auburn baseball, Championship Monday, Masters Week is here. Hold on 1 second, Jack. I don't know if you heard me doing it.
Oh, yes.
The sounds of Augusta.
Jacob Goins.
That's right. Masters Week is here, one of the best weeks of the year. John Calipari has decided just to ruin Jacob Goins' day by dipping out of Kentucky on one of the biggest sports stories in recent years.
That didn't have a whole lot of buildup either.
Yeah, that
almost
one was
like
out of the
just
blue.
Just dropped today.
Yep, and we got the totality happening right now in the Eclipse. I don't know if you're on the plains. It's a beautiful day here in Auburn today, but if you look outside, it definitely looks a little bit darker than it did 30 minutes ago. So where would you like to begin? Give us a ring, 334-321-1390. Jack, it's great to be back in studio with you, my friend. We don't get to do this often enough. Have a good time during the fall. How you been?
It certainly is, man. I tell you, they don't get this team chemistry all the time that we seem to have, but I'm glad to be back, man. Glad to be helping out today. You know, who you got this week in the Masters, Uncle T-Bone? You got a Masters pick to win this week?
I mean, I think everyone's going to take Scottie Scheffler, but I feel like it's about time for Rory to rise up and take it.
I like that one. I like the pick. Yeah, I'm looking at a Colin Morikawa. I'm looking at somebody that hits the irons well this week.
Yeah, I've been hearing a little bit of talk about Jordan Spieth. Not really sure about that. Not sure about the LIV guys. I hadn't watched a LIV tournament yet, Jack, so I have zero idea how and who is playing good on that tour. So I'm sure we'll find out shortly. The big names and the cream always seems to rise to the top over there in Augusta. And we're just going to go straight to the lines. Lonnie from Lochapoca. Lonnie, lay it down for us on this Monday afternoon. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How's it going, Uncle T-Bone?
Going good, my man. You got Jack Hudden in here. He's a good dude as well. I don't know if you've spoken to him yet.
War Eagle.
Bring it on. What you got, Lonnie?
Well, a couple things. First of all, it was good to see the Bammers get their butt whipped. They actually played a pretty good game, so I'll give them a little bit of credit, but they couldn't handle big man down low as the game went along, but it was good to see them not surpass us, at least, you know, getting past the semis there in the Final Four. But I wanted to talk baseball.
Okay.
And did you guys happen to go over to Plainsman Park this weekend and see any of the games, or?
Yeah, I was over there, Lonnie, on Friday night. Tigers take care of business, 9-5. Get off to a little rocky start with against Rocky Top, against Tennessee, the number 4 team in the country. Hit a bomb early, and I was like, oh, boy, here we go. But the Tigers rallied and hit the ball well, and the bullpen did its job on Friday.
Well, you know, I thought it was going to be a pretty fun weekend to be able to go watch the Tigers maybe take a series against Tennessee, but really, all I got was a big old fat slab of Jabba-Cue shoved down my throat. Had to watch the garbage that is the bullpen on Saturday and Sunday, and we ended up giving up 36 runs in 3 days over there. I always thought that Butch Thompson's specialty was pitching, but I don't know who our pitching coach is. I think Everett Tiefert or somebody like that. Maybe he's just, I don't know if he does anything or not, but in my opinion, that guy needs to be canned immediately.
I'll say this about baseball right now. It does seem like there's a lot of head scratching going on. I mean, even with the staff, it's a lot of these guys that you have coming back from last year. It's like you haven't. It's not even that they've stayed the same or haven't gotten better. It's just, I mean, you seem like they've regressed in some ways. There's been a couple of guys that they've brought in, and then a guy here or there that hasn't really gotten any better or worse. I think John Armstrong's been a nice little bright spot, but outside of him, you really can't find a whole lot where Auburn has gotten better, and actually you're finding some regression. What I say about, I know Everett Tiefert is going to get a lot of blame for things, and I will say I think Auburn's developing some new things this year with using analytics and using more of the data-driven approach, and I think a lot of SEC teams are doing that. So I don't know if there's something to that effect. It may be one of those things that, it may take a while to get into place. But yeah, there's a lot to be scratching your head about right now with Auburn pitching.
I'm starting to, and I'm sure the pumpers will call in and start telling me to relax and blah 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 and live in the past like they usually do, but. I just want what's best for Auburn. I want Auburn to be better. And outside of equestrian, we really look like shambles in just about every single sport right now. And I know John Cohen came from Mississippi State, but that's certainly what our athletic department is looking like right now, is a lot of Mississippi State. And I'm sick of it, quite frankly. So, if people can't handle that, people want to call in and get mad that I say that, so be it. But, Auburn has got to expect better. I'm not asking for anybody to be fired, but we have got to expect better than what's going on right now.
Lonnie, before we let you go, Lonnie from Lochapoca, now do you take slaw or no slaw with your Jabba-Cue?
Absolutely no slaw on the Jabba-Cue, just a little hot sauce.
Thank you so much for the call, Lonnie. You can lay it down like Lonnie did. Wow, Jack, starting it off here on a solar eclipse Monday,
Lonnie,
with some fire, laying it down. I myself like two in barbecue sauce, two in Q sauce with my Jabba. But look, not real happy with Auburn baseball. Tennessee scores 36 runs this weekend. Lose the first game 9-5 and go on a 31-run, 14-homer weekend on Auburn. Shelling the Tigers like it was the German line in 1916 on All Quiets on the Western Front and the Great War. And fans like Lonnie are shell-shocked from it, Jack.
If 14 home runs, 14 is almost as many cold beverages as you like to drink out on the golf course on Saturdays, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what, we'll get to A-Day in a minute, and them serving cold beverages there, it was quite the surprise, and good job, Auburn University. But the Tigers in baseball now sitting at 2-10 in league play, 18-13, I believe, overall. Butch Thompson had some comments about the pitching, Jack. I'm going to read them to you real quickly. Taking responsibility for the pitching, quote, "I'm just sitting here thinking like it's ultimately my responsibility. We have 6 weeks of SEC play, so I just urge everyone to understand it's my responsibility to have a non-competitive pitching staff in this amazing league." End quote. Everett Tiefert, the pitching coach at Auburn, I believe he is new this season, former big league pitcher. He's been with the Chicago White Sox for quite some time, maybe trying to revamp how we're doing pitching. I'm not really sure. But whatever it is, Tennessee scored 31 runs on Saturday and Sunday, and that was good for not one, Jack, but two back-to-back run-ruled games against the Tigers. That's not going to work over here.
No, it's not. And, looking at the record, if you throw out how everybody has looked thus far and trying to project forward, Auburn's still got a shot to make some noise. But like you said, it's got to happen right now, because you're coming up on – you've done your 4 weeks now of top five SEC teams you're playing. Now you get Kentucky coming in, who, oh, by the way, is 11-1 in the league. And so after that, you know, the schedule, I'm not going to say it gets easy, but it gets easier. You're going to have some teams in there like a Missouri, like a Mississippi State, an Ole Miss. They're not going to be these top five teams that you're playing.
Right.
So you're going to have to make up some stuff on the back end, and that's going to have to come in the form of series wins. You're probably going to have to pull out some sweeps if you want to sniff the NCAA tournament this year. I think hosting a regional is probably out the door after this weekend. And now you just got to focus on trying to fight your way to keep your season alive.
Yeah, hosting a regional has been out the door, is my belief. Making a regional is very questionable at best. Tigers have six more series in SEC play. Jacob said this past Friday, Jack, that it was do or die time this past weekend against Tennessee. I said that was too tall an order. It's do or die this weekend with Kentucky coming to town. And look, folks, it's not going to get easier. They were ranked 17th last week, ranked eighth now, another yep. top 10 team leading the Eastern Division, fresh off a sweep against Alabama and looking to sweep not only Auburn at home, but the dreams of any kind of postseason play, including the SEC tournament, away from Tiger fans.
Yeah, it's time now. Auburn baseball's got to win a series. They got to do it against Kentucky. If you don't do it, you know, if you only get one this weekend, even you drop to 3-12 overall in the league, and about that 13-win mark is where you need to get, even with a really good RPI that Auburn's going to have if they get to 13 wins. But you're going right. to have to go, what is that, 10-5 the rest of the way. I mean, you're going to have to win every single series if you drop this Kentucky
one. Yeah, I counted
one.
12-6.
Yeah.
With 18 SEC games left and you averaged winning 2 out of 3, which means maybe you don't do that every series, but possibly sweep somebody like Mississippi or Missouri who's not playing as well. Maybe even do some damage against Alabama at home in the last series of the year in later May. But that team is in real trouble. It's a shame they hit the ball well.
Yeah, they really did. And I thought that, you know, you got your top three guys who are probably some of the best hitters in the league. I mean, you got Ike Iris, McMurray, and Weiss, who are doing really good things. And then behind them, you hadn't been able to get a consistent production. Albeit, I still think that Auburn's able to score some runs. Just you can't hold teams to, you know, only, what is it, 9-10 runs a game, it seems like Auburn's given up.
You know, how demoralizing, I guess, is it to know that you got to come out and basically go for 10 to 12 runs a game to even have a chance at winning? I mean, think about that. The Vols scored 36 runs this weekend, not many errors, although there was a key one yesterday that really helped open up the floodgates. That's 12 runs a game, Jack.
Yeah.
That is a tall order at this level of baseball, especially when they go back-to-back run rule on you.
I would point to the mistakes in the field. Yes, there were a couple errors that really bit Auburn, but the other thing I'd point to is when you talk about pitching staff, the walks in college, the free bases that you give up seem to always come back to haunt you. We did I did a little study back in when I was in college, and we looked at leadoff runners getting on by walk and by singles. And more times in the singles, guys that walk come around to score. It just does something to your psyche when you walk a guy.
Well, I tell you, I mean, to me, pitching in baseball is like having a quarterback in football, whatever level it is in football, from the neighborhood football league, you've heard me say this, to the National Football League. The same can be said for pitching, whether they're playing at Old Felton Little Park or they're playing at Plainsman Park. You better have someone who can throw strikes.
Yes.
Because if you're walking people and giving free passes, it's just a matter of time until you get shelled out. Let's take our first break, Jack. You're on the line, 334-321-1390. Give us a ring, and you can be like Lonnie and lay it down here on this Solar Eclipse Monday.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Welcome back to On the Line. I am Uncle T-Bone here with Jack Hudden. We are pinch hitting for Jacob Goins today, who is over in Augusta. And speaking about Augusta, breaking news, folks, live remote this Friday, April 12th. That's right, Friday, April 12th. Please join us from 2 to 6 with both On the Line and The Drive at Baumhauer's on Bent Creek Drive in Auburn for Masters Friday. Brought to you by our good friends at Sensegreen. For air that's cool and clean, call Sensegreen. Bring your green jackets for Masters Friday on the new covered patio at Baumhauer's over on Bent Creek Drive. With over 70 televisions, there will be plenty of space to watch all the excitement with us over in Augusta for the Masters. There will be Masters drink and food specials. Jacob and Uncle T-Bone live on air from 2 to 4. Bill and Dan from 4 to 6. Hopefully Coach Don Dunn will come out. So come on out and enjoy how all the drama unfolds at the Masters this Friday at Baumhauer's. All of this hosted by our good friends over at Sensegreen. For air that's cool and clean, call Sensegreen. So Lonnie fired us up already. Auburn baseball, just got a text from someone that in the last 10 games, Auburn's given up 85 runs. Jack, did we even score 85 points in football last year?
Not sure about that. I don't know if we've scored that in the past couple of years, really. I think you go back to what we talked about last segment, but I think the biggest problem that this Auburn team's having right now, and I know you can look at the home run numbers that Tennessee put up. They're going to do that against a lot of teams this year, folks. That's not a news flash. I think the biggest thing that Auburn's got to correct is the free bases. They walk batters. They hit batters. It's not necessarily that they do it at an absorbent rate as opposed to other teams in the league, but it's the time in the game in which they're doing these things, at these clutch moments where maybe the bases are loaded and two outs and you've struck out a guy to get to this situation, and then you come back and you hit a guy and a run scores, and then the next guy hits a double, and then the next guy, you know, pokes a single through the right side, and all of a sudden what could have been no runs has turned into three or four runs in the inning because of a walked batter. So it's a struggle right now for the Auburn pitching staff to throw strikes simply. But when they did throw strikes against Tennessee, they got hit out of the ballpark. And so, you know, I don't know how you solve it. I don't know a whole lot about the science of pitching behind it. But what I will say is you got to find somebody who can at least put you in the zone and make them put the ball in play.
Yeah, what was kind of disappointing yesterday is for Auburn's pitcher to come out, go three up, three down in the first inning, kind of get everybody fired up. The Tigers score three runs in the bottom of the first, and then Tennessee hangs seven in the top of the second. I don't know if you watched much of the baseball this weekend. I sure did. That first baseman for Tennessee is an absolute beast.
Yep.
I mean, these kids are built different than when I was playing baseball many years ago. I mean, and so when you got these big, powerful guys that are just – they all have power.
Yeah.
I mean, the kid from Auburn High who's a freshman hit a bomb for Auburn Friday night to really get things going and break open the game. Everybody seems to hit the ball a long ways. Chicks love the long ball.
Chicks dig the long ball,
so
baby.
So kids are going to hit the long ball, especially in Plainsman Park, which isn't the biggest. It's pretty friendly for the home run unless the wind's blowing in.
Yeah,
so,
and I think that's the other thing with what Tennessee did this weekend is you saw a couple of them where they'd hit these opposite field home runs where the ball would get in the air,
right,
and you're thinking, okay, that's a lazy fly ball, and it just keeps carrying.
Yep.
Now, you can't really say, I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, Tennessee's juicing their bats or anything. It seemed different when Auburn hit the ball. It was a fly ball stays on the infield, or a fly ball stays in the field. For Tennessee, it was those things just kept carrying.
Yeah, I've been saying for years that small ball is completely underrated in college baseball. And people want to see the long ball. They want to see the big guy from Prattville who's like 6'1", 280, and just makes contact and gets it up in the air and takes the ball out. I mean, if you're not going to have massive fireball pitchers to go up against these big guys like Blake Burke, the first baseman I said from Tennessee, you better get some more runs, and you better get some guys who can put it out of the park at any moment.
Yeah, Christian Moore is another one, the leadoff guy for Tennessee, who had a big weekend. He had, I think it was three homers, although may have been four actually that he hit, but it was just up and down the lineup. You know, you had these guys coming up, and even the guys that weren't hitting 350, 360, they come up there hitting 270, but they got 8-9 home runs on the year. And it's what they teach. Tennessee's trying to lift the ball. I mean, they're really right, trying to put the uppercut swing on it. And that's a different level of teaching. If you've got guys that have the pop like that, you can do that. Tennessee kind of has a short porch of their own up in Knoxville. So, you know, just a tough weekend for Auburn. I know you get another chance here against Kentucky, and you know, we've been saying it for a few weeks now. You got to do something different, and I agree. But so far, everything you try is just it's not working. You can't get any production from the guys on the hill.
12 teams will make the SEC baseball tournament this year. Currently, Auburn will not be one of those teams. Can they get it together this weekend? Do or die series to change the trajectory of the season this weekend. We all agree, and it would be a good time to begin to dig out of the bottom of the SEC West and the conference. I don't know what they do differently, but I did see a lot of different things at A-Day this weekend, Jack.
Yeah, that was good. Let me kind of give a one more thought on this baseball season. You know, you do get Kentucky this weekend, and let's just say, and I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, what makes you think we can beat Kentucky? Let's say you do. Let's just say somehow that happens. After that, you're looking at series against Mississippi State, who hadn't been a world beater this year. You go to LSU, who's also bottom of the conference this year. They have not been very good. Then you get Ole Miss at home, you go to Missouri, and then you get Alabama back at home. So those are not those top five series that you're playing. If you get to 4-11 this weekend, that's, you know, if you win the series, that's where you'd get. Now you only got 11 games to win in these last five series. So I don't know. I just think that there's something
it's
to
it's doable.
I think it's doable to get to the postseason. You're gonna have to change something. I don't know what that is.
Maybe it's moving your stud starter to Saturday and giving some different look on Friday. And
who knows?
Just try and propel yourself into with a victory into Sunday for a winner take all on the series. But it's interesting you bring up these standings in the SEC. It's weird to see both LSU and Ole Miss so far down 3-9 in conference play. Heck, they're only a game ahead of Auburn.
Yeah.
So I mean, we can catch them. Alabama at 4-8, like you said, is no world beater. Mississippi State in conference out of all the teams left other than Kentucky on Auburn's schedule with the best conference record right now at 6-6, and then you've got Missouri, who's in the bottom of the East at 4-8. So it's now or never. It's do or die. Auburn has to make a move this weekend, and if they don't, they're going to be sitting at home, not just for any kind of regional NCAA post-conference, but for conference postseason as well.
Yep. Let's transition a little bit over here. Let's go to A-Day. I know you were talking about that. You were there. You were at the game. You had some boots on the ground. What'd you see at A-Day that you liked? Obviously, Cam Coleman was the big story. Towns McBoom, how about him?
Oh, man. That guy. The McBoomer himself. Yes. We nicknamed him. Not a surprise to you and me.
We've been
on this guy since day one of last football season. You've had the pleasure of watching him many a Friday night in Auburn at Auburn High as a kicker on the sidelines there and working the board at Auburn High football games. You turned me on to him this year, and I mean, he's exploded onto the scene with these massive kicks last year in high school, and it's no fluke.
No, goodness, no. You see it multiple times. It becomes a mainstay. You know, I watched him last year, and I guess it was a Smith Station game, kick a 60-yarder, and it was almost like he was lining up from 45 and just putting it down the middle, you know, just like any other kicker might do in college right now. And you look back and you go, okay, what was that from, you know, 43, 44? No, that was from 60, and it's good from about 75. So it's really impressive what these kickers can do. I'm not sure. I mean, at some point, are we going to get guys trotting out there for 70-yarders?
Yeah.
It seems like we're going that way. I don't know how you keep doing it.
We've talked about this before, Jack. Have you ever really, truly tried to kick a regulation-size football through a goalpost?
I think my long was about 20-some-odd yards.
Yeah. It was like your average point after attempt, maybe 25.
And you get the duck that just goes over the crossbar.
And it just looks like some type of hook that you hit off a tee box that you came over the top on and overcooked. And it feels like even worse than that golf swing like that, it just, your whole leg reverberates in pain. I mean, and this kid's lining up it still should be in high school, okay? I mean, he probably, like Cam Coleman's getting ready to go to his prom this Saturday, and he's hitting bombs.
Yeah.
I mean, the kick that he made from 58, I've heard 57, it was a 58-yard field goal. I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. To win A-Day would have been good from 65. Now, I'm not going to say it had been good from 70, but it had been close.
Yeah, yeah. It's impressive. It's really impressive what he does and what all of Auburn does. And, you know, I know we'll talk a little bit more about that. Obviously, a couple of big days from some other players. But We've been on him for a while now, and it's good to be vindicated for that, isn't it?
Yep, Auburn High local legend Towns McBoom goes 7-7, field goals, 58-yarder to win A-Day for Auburn. It was fantastic. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. You're at On the Line, ESPN 106.7.
Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Okay, welcome back to the Monday edition of On the Line. I am Uncle T-Bone in studio with Jumpin' Jack Hudden. We're talking A-Day, and I went over there Saturday, Jack, had a fantastic time. I've got some real thoughts about the defense to begin with on my side. But before we go to that, let's just go ahead and knock out the offense, because everyone's going to want to talk about two things. Number eight, Cam Coleman, and what's going on at quarterback.
Yep. You know, I think to address that first part, this is another guy that you and I, and I'm not going to say that we discovered him or anything, because obviously this dude was a five-star a long time ago.
Sure.
But I told you when I walked in, I think last year or when we were doing football, I told you when I walked in one day, Uncle T-Bone, I just saw Cam Coleman last night, and that's the best high school wide receiver that I've ever seen play live. And I stand by it, man. That kid torched Auburn High both times he played him. He was a man among boys out there. I thought he did everything. I thought he ran routes well. I thought he caught the ball well. I thought he caught with his hands rather than his body. He was quick. He was able to get by defenders. He could use juke moves and stuff like that. I think he's one of the most complete wide receivers that Auburn will ever have had by the time he gets done with ball. Now, having said that, you don't want to put too much pressure on the kid. At the same time, that NIL money ain't going to pay for itself.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that when you brought this up to me last fall when we were on the air on the pregame show, that my exact response was our friend Travis Wisdom from the Wisdom Firm, proud sponsor and partner here at 106.7. His father was a college football coach. He knows football very well, has seen a lot of football over the years, and was at that exact game that you were talking about where he just really torched Auburn High. And he was texting me that night that this is the best-looking high school football player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, man, come on now. You know, come on, man. He's like, no, I'm serious about it. And then you came in that exact same morning basically saying the same thing. You got to think about some of these athletes that have played over at Auburn High School on that field, both for Auburn and for other teams over the years. I mean, just from Phoenix City alone, I can remember James Joseph running up and down the field at Duck Sanford Park. So, I mean, there's been some tremendous athletes over there. And I'm with you. The guy goes for four catches, 92 yards, and a touchdown. He's your offensive MVP of the A-Day, and makes one of the better catches that I've seen an Auburn receiver make in years in this A-Day on what looked like to me a very pretty but overthrown deep ball. He gets on his horse and accelerates to get that ball and has the length and athleticism to pull it in. It was an amazing catch and got things going over there this past Saturday.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking with Alan, who's running our board today, and you know, he was kind of saying how as soon as you have any sort of problem with Peyton Thorne this year, that's what people are going to go back to as well. What about the throw that Hank Brown made in the bowl game? Or what about the throw he made at A-Day when he took Cam Coleman? Folks, like, that's great. Ball was overthrown. Most of that was Cam Coleman going out and getting it. I mean, he's full extension as he's fallen to the ground and he's able to pull it in. It's an overthrown ball, and yeah, you can say something about knowing who you're throwing to, I guess. But, you know, I think that, and this would be a good segue into talking about the quarterbacks that you were talking about. I'm not sure that the overreaction is going to be worth it this year, because I don't think that you're going to get a whole lot of change. You know, if Peyton Thorne kind of slides one way or the other, that's one thing, but I don't think that you're going to get this huge competition as you continue to go down the season, unless somebody like Walker White just has an outstanding, outstanding summer.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't like how you put that. It's just not worth it to have this overreaction this year to it. And I want to stress that also on the expectation of this team. I know a lot of people are really excited. Football was here. We got to see it. We got to smell it. We got to touch it. That gets any fan of any fan base. Heck, by July, Vanderbilt fans will say that they're going to make a bowl. I mean, you know, it's anticipation and expectation type of year, you know, up until July, until really football gets going again. People will just be talking out of their minds about how Cam Coleman's going to win the Heisman and we're back and when and the defense is back. And, you know, folks, from what I saw over there, when you've got – and Cam Coleman is going to be special. I mean, honestly, I'm racking my brain. He looks like, I think, what Julio Jones was to Alabama as a freshman.
Yeah.
But I'm not so certain, and I'm about to say this, I can't believe it, that he's not more athletic now than when Julio Jones got to Alabama.
Yeah.
This kid is just absolutely ripped.
Well, did you see the picture? I guess it was after A-Day. Somebody put it out where Cam Coleman is standing next to Perry Thompson, who's not in pads. And Thompson looks bigger than him. So what does that look like when you got both of them on the field?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up because I was really impressed with how the receivers looked at A-Day. And before we get into quarterbacks, the transfer from Cal, the Sam Jackson kid, is athletic. He's fast. He runs great routes. The transfer from Georgia State looks good. It was nice to see Cam Brown step back up. That was somebody I've been calling out for years to be a player. I think he has the ability. And then you add in Cam Coleman. That Bryce Cain's name was mentioned by coaches as impressive. But bringing in Perry Thompson as well. Auburn really and truly does upgraded in totality, no doubt about it, on the outside. And it's been years in the making for that for Auburn fans.
Do you think that's a product of coaching this offseason, or do you think it's just an influx of talent immediately makes guys better?
It's the number one thing that I believe that this coaching staff has put an emphasis on to try and rebuild Auburn, and it's recruiting and bringing in talent. Look, you can be the best coach in the world. You could have Nick Saban down here last year. You weren't going to get much more than what Auburn got out of that roster. Auburn fans need to understand this. That roster is so depleted that people like Malik Blockton come off the field, number 47 on defense, and I'm like, who is that?
Yeah.
Oh, T-Bone, that's Blockton. He's 17 years old. He still should be in high school. Well, he's going to be a starter for us here pretty soon.
Yeah.
That's how depleted this roster is. A guy like that would go into an Alabama or Georgia, and, oh, yeah, he's a good-looking kid. We've got about 8 or 9 of them. Hey, son, go ahead and get in the back. Go ahead and redshirt. Go ahead and hit the weights. Go ahead and prove to us you're going to do all the small things while you're waiting your chance to be on this team. He'll be starting probably here soon at Auburn. I mean, that's how depleted this roster is. I think it's all about talent infusion right now, and then coaching secondly. And on the defensive side of the ball, I'm certainly see an upgrade there as well.
Yeah, definitely. We were even talking about the linebackers a little bit when we were at a break there. I mean, you know, you had thought DJ Barber had a really good day. He was a new guy. Thought Robert Woodyard, who seems like about a seventh year freshman by now, but he's out there. He's a freshman. He's been really good. I thought he was impressive. DeMarcus Riddick was another freshman that you saw flying around out there. So, I mean, you know, there was a lot of good things I felt like for the defense. On the offensive side of the ball, let's talk about those quarterbacks now.
Okay.
Peyton Thorne, I thought I'd give him about a C+ on the day. And I don't know what you thought of that, but I thought some of the decisions were fine, but I think Auburn's still lacking that playmaking ability from the quarterback spot.
It's hard for me to judge him fully off of this scrimmage, strictly because he's not being tackled. And there were very few times where he was showing flashes of being able to move the chains with his legs, which is I think is very underrated with him.
Yeah.
That kid can move. That kid can run. And so you're not going to really have him out there running a full-blown read option, run pass zone option, because the defense knows that if he keeps it and they get anywhere near him, they're just gonna call a whistle. So I'm not so certain that offense is even close to being fully installed either. So it was very base. I think the defense was given the liberty to be a little bit more complex than the offense in this game. And I will say this. I was getting texts during the game, early in the game, that people were like, we should have gone to the portal. Should have gone to the portal. And I can't stress this enough either, folks. There's only so many NIL money dollars to go around. And Peyton Thorne is most likely going to be your starting quarterback. He wasn't even here this past spring. And that was just a controlled scrimmage situation too. So I've got to see a little bit more data from him before I'm willing to say, I'm out.
Yeah, I think so. I think some of the other guys that you look at, like a Holden Gariner, I thought had a good day statistically. Had a couple of throws that were a little behind receivers. But other than that, you know, we've heard good things about him the entire offseason thus far. And then I think another guy that I thought had a couple of moments where he kind of looked like a freshman, but also had a couple of really good throws. I thought Walker Wright did a really good job in at least competing for the most part today.
Yeah, I mean, look, you got to understand, too, how much of that also is to blame pressure-wise brought by the defense. The offensive line, we're getting some questions about that. I don't think there was quite the push that people were looking for in the running game. I thought all in all they did a pretty good job, but, you know, there's some new faces there, Jack. So it's been two complaints really and truly for Auburn fan for years, the offensive line play and the wide receiver play.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Think we got a caller on the line. I believe so. No, we do not. Sorry. Thought we had somebody calling in. I thought we had one of them to go. But if you want to, 334-321-1390 is the number to reach us here at On the Line. It's Uncle T-Bone and Jack Hutton filling in for Jacob Goins today. Jacob's out at Augusta National today playing a little Masters for us. So I believe you have something that you wanted to say about that.
What did you say? He's where?
He's at the Masters today. Oh.
There it is. The sounds of Augusta. Jim Nantz. The green jacket. The Eisenhower pine tree. I think that's been frozen and taken out by lightning. But anyway, yeah, good for Jacob. Have you ever been over to Augusta before we go to break?
I've never been. And I want to go, man.
Yeah, you need to go. Everybody needs to go. It's not quite what you think it is until you get inside those gates, especially getting there. But if you ever go, make sure you take some very, very comfortable walking shoes because it is the borderline Appalachian Trail. You cannot tell on television, but it is up and down like billy goats over
there. I've been told pimento cheese sandwich is something you gotta have. What else is there? You got an Uncle T-Bone Eats there?
Oh, I'm going for the pimento cheese in a tasty cold frothy snack. Great prices over there. My gosh, man, you just can't beat the place. But when you get there, you walk in and it's just like, if you've never seen it before, it's unlike anything you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And TV does it justice on the looks a little bit, but if you get over there, especially over there in Amen Corner when those azaleas are blooming, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, I've just heard that you can't find a blade of grass that's out of place there at that golf course. I mean, you know, you'll see the tufts of grass or a little weed here and there on some courses, and people say there's just none of them there.
Yeah, you can't see anything. It looks like everything's just been spray-painted green on that turf grass. We're going to take a quick time out. Give us a ring here at 334-321-1390. We're talking A-Day. Going to get into a little basketball at the top of the hour. Give us a call here at On the Line, 106.7 ESPN Radio.
Pythodge Custom Homes and Renovation, East Alabama's classic home builder. A woman-owned business founded in 2014, Mary and Ken Pilant founded Pythodge to maintain community charm while restoring classic homes in Auburn, Opelika. Whether it is a bathroom, kitchen retrofit, or that start-from-scratch custom build, no job or dream is too big or small for Pythodge. Now offering land management services through its sister company, Dirtworks LLC. Give them a call at 334-748-9699. Pythodge, East Alabama's classic home builder.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of On the Line. Jack, we're talking A-Day, and we just want to jump right into it back with the quarterback talk. I saw some good things. I saw some really good things. I saw some pretty bad passes, though, that were way off the mark, not just from one or two quarterbacks, but from all of them. I think that's something that's going to improve, though, over time, especially when everyone gets here, including Perry Thompson this summer. I'm looking for great improvement from Peyton Thorne, but I do want to temper everyone's expectations with his play this season. He does have more weapons to use, and I think the offense is going to be more dynamic than it was last year with Phillip Montgomery for sure. But man, I really do feel like this offense has a ways to go.
I do too. I think that they're going to have to see some sort of success in a run game to really open up what they're trying to do in the air. And I think that having Peyton Thorne's legs is going to help that. You know, you mentioned last segment how I think there's some underrated ability with Peyton Thorne there and using his legs to pick up yards, pick up first downs. But I'll say I think on design run plays, like you saw Jarquez Hunter try to run the ball, you saw Damari Alston and Brian Battee a little bit, none of them really had a real big day. And it could have been, you can explain that a little bit with Auburn's defensive line played a really good game. But I think that does lead to concern. You know, it's always the question of, well, was it Auburn's defensive line or was it Auburn's offensive line that is not so good? You know, there can be a little bit of both, but I think Auburn's tried to revamp the offensive line in some ways. Of course, they brought in Percy Lewis, the big left tackle from Mississippi State. You got a couple of JUCO guys that have made their way in here. But you do have a couple guys that are returning as well. And so, you know, I think that's going to be where it starts for Auburn is, can you run the football? And if you can do that, that's going to start opening things up in the air, man.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that out of all the running backs, Damari Alston played the best. He's been very, very impressive from everything I've heard this spring. One place where Auburn definitely is not deficient in talent on the offensive side, Jack, is at tight end.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, the transfer from Maryland, Rico Walker, if they can get him and Fairweather on the field together at times, they're going to wreak havoc in the middle of the field against other defenses.
Yeah, those are some big dudes that are out there, man. You got Fairweather and Walker, who I think they're a very similar build like that. And so if you line both of them up in the slot, you know, it's pick your poison at that point, especially if you got two big wide receivers like a Cam Coleman and maybe a Cam Brown or maybe a Perry Thompson, whoever it is on the other side. It becomes pick your poison then.
Yeah, it's very evident that Auburn has basically improved almost at every position and upgraded in talent. And I'm with you, man. There's going to be a lot of options this fall for the offensive play callers over at Auburn. Dan in Auburn. Dan's on the phone. What you got, man?
Hey, guys. A couple of things. Obviously, Cam Coleman looks like somebody we've never had. In all my years of watching Auburn football, I mean.
Yeah, I agree with you.
A few decent guys, but you know, he's a guy that single-handedly can change a game. So I'm super excited about that. And just like you said, I was very happy with Camden Brown. You know, last year we were expecting him to take a step forward, and then he went backwards. But he looked so much better in this game, like he was confident and very competent, you know, catching the ball. So, I mean, I was pretty excited for that. I think one thing that they did in this game, which I'm really happy about, is that typically under Gus – and even under Harsin, we would always run a base defense during the AD game. And the offense could pretty much kind of do what they want, and it kind of gave you a false sense of, you know, hey, the offense is a lot better than it really is. They were blitzing. I mean, they were sending guys every play from different angles, linebackers, and I think you got more of a true picture of the offense than having this false sense of, you know, like we typically do. Because it's always been base defense. And So I don't know if that was just a different philosophy, but that's what the better teams seem to do. And I liked the speed on defense across the board. I thought the linebackers just looked faster, and like they were going in the right places, you know. And obviously maybe that's our one freshman guy. He said he's a third year guy, but he's still a freshman. You know, he just looked like he was fast. And most of the, dude, we just didn't look like a slow team. We looked like we knew what we were doing, and we were even when we gave up some plays, it was usually good plays by the offense. So, you know, I feel pretty good about it all the way around for the most part.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I'll say this: I think you saw a little bit more. You talk about base defense versus offense in the spring game. And I actually think we saw a little bit of the opposite this time. I thought we saw a little bit more base offense and a defense that was reacting to what they were seeing. And I actually think that's a good, I think that's a good thing for your offense, just because you're not quite showing them everything and you're still having a little bit of success in your base offense. So get your base offense down first and then complicate from there. You know, for the defense, I think it's good because a lot of what you're doing there is you're having to get off blocks on the line, and, you know, there's not a whole lot of base offensive stuff that you can do on the line. And so I think that that was good to see from the defensive line, is that they were winning their battles against the offensive line. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But I do think there was a little bit more base offense that Auburn was running, and maybe that helped the defense a little bit, but maybe it's also good for this offense to get that down first.
Yeah. Well, you also have to think one more thing. It's like when you don't have receivers that the other team fears, and they literally can just cover them one-on-one with their cornerbacks, they bring their safeties up, and they make everything you do 10 times harder. It's like now, I don't know if you can do that. I don't know if you want to leave Cam Coleman one-on-one, or even
no, no.
If Thompson comes in and can do the same. I mean, because those guys will burn you, you know. And so I think it just changes everything. It should make the rest of the offense that much better, you know. But like last year, I mean, we were hoping even if the quarterback threw a perfect throw, the receiver might not catch it. I mean, just literally the receivers were quite underwhelming, so – you know,
oh, yeah. I mean, Dan, I'm with you. I put the over-under last year on drop passes for Auburn receivers at 50 by the end of the season. And I would probably, from what I saw, have to bet the over if you went back and went through it. So appreciate the call, Dan. You can get in, 234-321-1390, talking some A-Day. He said a couple of things I totally agree with. Speed, complexity of defense, much different. DJ Durkin obviously is far more aggressive than we've had in years at defensive coordinator, Jack. And I really do think that this defense is going to have to go with a bunch of young guys, but they're going to be exciting, and I can't wait for us. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Top of the hour, we're going to take a break here at ESPN Radio 106.7.
ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
Welcome back to On the Line Monday edition. No, I am not Jacob Goen. This is Uncle T-Bone here with Jack Hudden. Jacob is over in Augusta, Georgia. That's right, covering the Masters for us over there on a Monday practice round day. And
what on earth is he doing over there in Augusta? You say what is it now? I'm not sure I quite remember.
Listening to the sounds of Augusta with Jim Nance, Jacob Goins. Can you imagine Jacob calling Augusta over there on Amen Corner?
Hello, friends.
He'd be so awesome. Hey, quick announcement about Jacob also. He'd probably be a little bashful about what I'm about to say, but, you know, I think the world of him, and we all do. He's a talented young man. And our man, Jacob Goins, Jack, wins an Addy this year.
Yeah.
That's right, baby. In 2024, the Alabama Broadcasters Association Best in Broadcasting Radio Sportscaster, Jacob Goins,
yours time. Too,
our friend and here at On the Line. So that is big news. Congratulations, Jacob, and well-deserved. I had someone not long ago text me. They were listening to Jacob do a Lee Scott basketball game. They thought it was a Final Four game. That's how passionate and talented he is. And also breaking news, speaking of Augusta, get on out there Friday, another live remote. This is the third one of the year. They're going so well. The first one was over at the Plaza Bar to tip off the tourney on a Thursday to start the NCAA tournament. Two Fridays ago, we were at Fairway Auto Brokers. That was a ton of fun. And this Friday, we will be over at Baumhauer's on Bent Creek Drive in Auburn for Masters Friday. And that's hosted by our good friends at Sensa Green for air that's cool and clean. Jack calls Sensa Green.
That's a big deal there. That's a big deal getting in with Baumhauer's.
Yeah, I mean, bigger than Wayne Newton.
I know. Bigger than Wade Bennett.
That's big. That's big, my friend. So we're talking A-Day. We're talking about Auburn baseball. Lonnie from Lochapoca's had about enough of it. He told me privately off air that the season's over. I don't believe that. You don't believe that. But if they don't get it together this weekend against Kentucky, it will be over. A lot of thoughts on A-Day. Cam Coleman's the big story. Towns McGoo from Auburn, our friend Towns McBoom, may have stolen the story of A-Day. The defense is nothing but a bunch of young Turks and going to be aggressive with DJ Durkin. Where are all the DJ Durkin haters that about a month and a half ago? I'm telling you, that was fake news if there ever was any. Auburn is lucky to have him. They should be very improved. But I want to pivot to some basketball. The championship game is set tonight, UConn giving 6.5 to Purdue. I think it's going to be a great game. Both games Saturday. The first game, I was a little disappointed in how NC State played. It didn't help when O'Connell had that weird injury early in that game. Yeah. It looked like he might have broken his hip. I mean, that was bad.
Yes.
And that really slowed up the Wolfpack. That's been a team, if you've been listening, and folks that I've been high on since they've made this run and been pulling for. They're done. Zach Edey has improved greatly this season, and through the tournament he's gotten stronger and stronger and stronger. And then Alabama, our good friends over in Tuscaloosa, gave everything they could against UConn, threw everything but the kitchen sink at them, and UConn said, hey, okay, Alabama, nice little run you had there. Goodbye, good riddance, and good night, Irene. UConn is the class of college basketball right now, Jack.
Absolutely, and you look back at, you know, you talk about Zach Edey from Purdue, and I think coming into this tournament, I think there were really two guys in the country that you looked at and said, okay, I'd like to see a matchup with Zach Edey and with that guy. And one of those was DJ Burns from North Carolina State, mm-hmm. the big kid. He looks like a nose tackle playing center. And then the other guy is this guy, this center from UConn, Klingon, who has been unstoppable in the postseason. I think a lot of Auburn fans would have maybe liked to have seen Jani Broome, but I think Zach Edey has gone against these two guys over the past few days, and it's going to be interesting to see how UConn plays him, because Burns, you know, he got in foul trouble early in that game in the Final Four, and you really didn't have a whole lot of him in the first half. You had some of him in the second half before he got in deeper foul trouble. So I think that's going to be interesting how UConn chooses to go about that. I think Purdue will go right at Klingon, try to get him on the board for a couple fouls so they can go inside to Edey a lot. That's going to be a fun matchup, though, to watch when those two guys are out there.
Yeah, I think Klingon's got a little bit more help off the bench with Dyra coming off and helping him, number 10. That kid's athletic and moves like a gazelle up and down the court as well. Purdue's going to come right at anybody with Zach Edey, right? I mean, he is their go-to. He is their number one jammer. I'm looking for Connecticut to go right at him and try and get him in foul trouble, or at least that's what – good luck with that. He's so big and versatile, it's hard to do. But the clinging kid for UConn is just – he's incredible.
Yeah.
And here's what I liked about him more than anything is after the game. They come up to him and they talk to him about how Grant Nelson basically posterized him, right? And I thought that was going to be a moment for Alabama on that slam dunk, which was very impressive, where basically the Russian was cut.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is where Alabama says, okay, they're not a machine, they're man, and we can take them down. And UConn was like, no, thanks for your nice little slam dunk.
Yeah.
thanks for your nice little rally. And they asked Klingon after the game about kind of getting posterized like that, and he goes, everybody gets dunked on.
Yeah, that's and a just really moves on. Good comment.
Yeah, and basically says, we just dunked on Alabama. Look at the scoreboard. I don't care about an individual play. I forgot about it already, and we just ran them off the court.
Yeah, and then he goes on. He scores 18 in that game on Saturday. And, of course, the other thing—
with an injured arm.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I thought about that game that UConn did really well was, you know, Alabama's been putting up 100 to 110 points on teams last couple of months or so. UConn holds them to 72 in this game and puts up 86 on them. Now, you can say about, you know, maybe the game got a little bit out of hand there late, but, I mean, I thought UConn really stepped up their game there late, started hitting shots.
Right.
Castle is a guy, Stephon Castle is a guy that some Auburn fans may recognize. Auburn was in on him close to the end, but
he's been
really good for UConn this year.
Very physical. Plays a hardcore, hard-nosed brand of defense. Not afraid of the physicality whatsoever as a freshman. The kid gets his fourth foul in that game. You know what Danny Hurley does?
Leave him out there, Biggie.
Leaves him in.
Leave him out there.
And I'm like, okay, this coach thinks differently.
Yeah.
He's like, whatever, I'm not worried about him fouling out. We'll figure it out. I want my main man out there in these crunch times. And he was a difference maker in that game. But the real difference maker other than Klingon to me was when Caravan started making a couple of threes.
Yep, I agree with that. And, you know, Alabama would come down and they'd hit a three, you know, after UConn may have stretched out to 8 or 10 or something like that. Alabama come down, they can do that. They can stop a run by hitting a three, and I thought they did that a few times. I think how you handle that from there is how you beat Alabama, and UConn did it. Every time that Alabama would stop a run, UConn would come down, they would answer, and they would say, we're going to get at least a little bit of the run that we just made back, and they kept doing that all game. I think UConn's really mentally tough, and I think they're really physically tough as well. That's what makes it hard to beat.
There's no question about it. Their mental toughness is a whole different level.
Yeah.
I mean, Danny Hurley he's easily the best coach in college basketball, maybe one of the top coaches in all of basketball right now. What they're doing offensively, if you ever watch them while the player does, watch the team and the part of the team that doesn't have the ball, watch their offensive movement, Jack. It is radical. And they're constantly weaving in and out, playing two-man games, playing three-man games, running pick and roll, running offset picks. I mean, they just basically, despite not being a real transition team, which I believe if they had to get in transition, they could because they're that good.
Oh, yeah.
But they basically just wear Alabama out by running their players all around and through all these pick and rolls and all these picket fences that they're setting, and even in their rebounding ability. So if they missed a shot after holding and running Alabama's players in a half court for 20 seconds and they get the ball again, guess what's about to happen for the next 20 seconds?
And the next 20 seconds.
It's a relentless brand of basketball.
Really is. You know, I think the other thing that you think about with that piggybacks off of that somewhat, the style of play in college basketball has gotten so much into run and gun, up and down, let's go quick, let's fire three balls. Alabama does that. UConn, you would think that they do that, and I think they can, like you mentioned, but you look at the assist numbers for that game, UConn with 20 assists in that game across the board. You had Tristan Newton with 9, Stephon Castle had a couple, you had a few from the other guard, Cam Spencer. And so they put up 20 assists in that game. I mean, those are crazy numbers for a team like that, especially in a Final Four game. So I think that just goes to show you how much UConn does just about everything well when it comes to running sets.
Yeah, it's an older school brand of basketball, but it's a very advanced one and complex one. And when you have Nate Oates calling timeouts, you're doing something right. One thing that I noticed that Alabama did all season very well is if there was a big play, and like say Auburn, Dylan Cardwell had a slam dunk and he was going to the flex and everybody was going wild, they get that ball up the court immediately to try and answer that and hush it up real quick. They tried that with UConn, and in the first half it worked a little bit. In the second half it was non-existent. Look at these stats, though, on all the little things that UConn did better than Alabama. Steals 4-2, blocks 8-5, assists, like you said, 20-19, total rebounds 38-31, turnovers, Alabama has 7, UConn has 4. They're just doing all the little things relentlessly and to a T, and they're just dialed in with what their coach wants to do. It's going to be really hard for me to pick against them tonight.
And the other thing is they shoot it just fine. I mean, you know, you think about how great of a team Alabama is at shooting the ball. Alabama shoots 47% from behind the arc that night. UConn answers with 40% of their own. Overall, UConn shoots 50% on the night. Alabama shoots 44%. They do everything well. It's a really tough ask to go out and beat them in just about any facet. And I think Purdue has got their hands full. I think UConn's the favorite in this. And obviously they are. They're the number one seed overall. But I got to take UConn as my favorite in this game. I think they got too much that they do well. And then I think Purdue's got a couple of deficiencies that you can attack.
You mentioned shooting in that game. In the first half, Alabama was red hot, 7-for-10 behind the three-point line.
Yep.
UConn got the majority of their three-pointers, though, late. It's not how you drive, but how you arrive. And UConn arrived with that last 4 to 5 minutes. Alabama kind of went cold. They couldn't answer. Grant Nelson missed a three-pointer, and then another three-pointer was missed. I can't quite recall. It might have been Mark Sears. And then after that, UConn just put the Tide to sleep. Nice little season you had there, Alabama. Congratulations on the Final Four. You should be very excited. But I want to give them a warning real quick.
Bring it on.
I want to give everybody a public service announcement, and all you Alabama folks listening out there, just because you got to the Final Four this year doesn't mean you're going back next. The reactionary that I heard was from a lot of Alabama fans I know, well, we'll be back next year. We're going to return everybody. We'll be back next year. I've got full experience with this.
Yeah.
There are more circumstances that will be going on over the next year that will prevent you from getting back to the Final Four than from getting there. That's why it's so important, like Auburn or Alabama, teams like that that aren't blue blood status like UConn, that when you get there, you got to take care of business.
Yeah, absolutely you do. I think that's a good point about taking advantage of the opportunity when it comes up. Yeah, and I think that's a good point because, you know, Auburn kind of experienced that also with basketball. You know, they didn't really get a chance to in 2020 after a Final Four year.
And that was a team prime to do it, and circumstance took it away.
Yes, yeah, and I would exactly agree with that. I think the other thing you look at is you go back to Auburn football, you know, back in 2013, it seemed like Auburn's bringing back their quarterback, Auburn's bringing back everybody on the defensive side, and it just kind of goes by the wayside down in the middle of the year when you have a couple of things happen. It happens that way in sports. You can never count on it.
To get that close that you can taste it is painful when it goes away. But I tell you, when you get that close and you don't take care of business, things just seem to kind of go wayward. And that's the way I see it. Look, we're going to take a break. 334-321-1390. Give us a call here at On the Line, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Welcome back to On the Line Monday edition here at ESPN Radio 106.7. I am Uncle T-Bone, joined by Jack Hudden, Jacob Goins, on location in Augusta at the Masters. We're talking some basketball. Haven't even gotten to what possibly other than the championship game, and may even be a bigger story, folks. Kentucky coach John Calipari. And Alan, you were saying this earlier, all right, if you went to bed last night, if you were basically an old boomer like me and are close enough to it and you've had enough and you're ready to throw in the towel at 9:30, you missed the explosion that was Twitter.
Yeah, the first thing that I saw last night, it was probably around 9:15-ish, and I saw that there was one tweet from like a local Fayetteville, I believe it was Fayetteville, TV reporter, and it said breaking news of Calipari talking to Arkansas, and I just scrolled by. I didn't think anything of it. I'm like, that's not real. And then next thing you know, you have some of these bigger personalities on Twitter and reporters that were reporting it, and that's when the light bulb really went off to me and a lot of other fans that live and die by Twitter, guilty. But it was definitely a shocking time, being so late at night that everything, and from that 9:30 to 11 o'clock time slot, it was all heck broke loose out there.
Jack, now has NIL bagged another old brown bagger? like John Calipari? I mean, is this something that he's just fed up with the fans, or the fans are fed up with him? I mean, what's going on here? Because this story is, you talk about out of left field.
Well, you know, I think you mentioned a couple things there that I don't think either of them are too far out of left field. You know, I think that NIL probably has something to do with it. I will say I think Kentucky probably spends a lot of their resources and puts them towards NIL for basketball, namely. But I do think that there is something to the effect you're talking about Calipari being involved in that Kentucky fan base for a long time. You know, you started to see a little bit of tension there the last few years with him and with the entire fan base. And a lot of it kind of came to a head this year where it was actually when Kentucky came to Auburn. And after the game, you get this video of Calipari coming out saying, basically, you know, I told you, and you should have more trust in the system, and this is just what we do, and it makes me feel good when our players, you know, perform this way because it shuts all of the keyboard war. Whatever he said,
I'm the guy that's put $900 million in the NBA and players, and I'm going up to the All-Star game on my private jet and with my Rolex and $50,000. I'm the nature boy, folks. Yes. You aren't.
Yes, yes. It was very much a look at me from Calipari. So I don't know that. I wonder if that just kind of rubbed a bunch of Kentucky boosters the wrong way. And, you know, when Calipari saw his opportunity, he was kind of like, you know, I'm out of this. Screw this. I'm done. And I'm headed to Arkansas. And then Kentucky, you know, Kentucky, it works out for them because they don't have to pay the huge buyout that they were going to in a situation where, you know, they probably weren't very invested in.
Well, you know, what's weird about it is their athletic director, Mitch Barnhart, came out like a – not long after the tournament, said he will be our coach next year. Basically, y'all all hush up. Fans, stop being fans. Please stop saying hurtful things. Our man's going to be here. This is your coach. But what rubs a Kentucky fan worse, him lashing out at them or losing to St. Peter's last year in the first round and Oakland this year in the first round of the NCAA tournament?
I'd have to say I would imagine that both of them don't do particularly well. But, yeah, I think that it all kind of – I mean, it's all started – and this has gone back, I think, before even last year's loss to St. Peter's. I mean, I think that Kentucky for a long time has just not really performed like you thought they would in the tournament. I mean, you know, they'd be around a 32 team when you felt like they were a top three seed in the country sometimes. And just it never really felt like John Calipari was able to get Kentucky to play their best in the tournament. And I think that's what has a lot of fans, like you said, rubbed the wrong way.
You mentioned if he goes to Arkansas, they won't have to pay some enormous buyout. Speaking of buyouts, a few of the names on this list, this short list, include Nate Oates at Alabama. His buyout would be $18 million. To go to Kentucky. Do you think that the University of Kentucky is willing to fork over 18 mil to Alabama to take their coach away from them? I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't know about it. I mean, I think it would have been worse had you fired him outright. But, you know, I do think that there's something to, you know, if you go get Nate Oates from Alabama or something like that, if you go get a guy like that, you're going to have to pay a pretty big deal. And I think the other guy that they'll probably look at is a guy that's in a game tonight. It'll be Dan Hurley who they're probably looking at, I think. They may make him say no. You know, I'm sure that you'll hear some chatter about, oh, all of a sudden Bruce Pearl's interested in this. You're going to hear chatter like that. I don't think that there's a whole lot of it is true until it is, obviously. Yeah. But I think for the fact with Hurley, I think what you're going to have to do is you make him say no to whatever offer, and then you try to go get whoever your second guy is. If it is a Nate Oates, if it's somebody out in the West Coast that's, you know, having a startup year. I don't know. I think that Hurley's probably the number one guy you're going to look at. It's Kentucky. It's a big program. I think the question on that is, does Hurley leave Connecticut?
I wonder if that depends on if he wins tonight. I mean, what more can you do? Go back to back to back? I mean, I guess that would be a goal. Kentucky, obviously one of the bluer, maybe bluest of blue blood jobs out there historically. UConn's no slouch either. Some of the other names in this sales funnel of coaches loaded up early. And I'm with you. I think you got to take a lot of these names with a grain of salt right now. Scott Drew over at Baylor. Billy Donovan. With the Chicago Bulls, that's a negative. Dan Hurley, like you mentioned, Sean Miller, Rick Pitino, They're going to bring him back. One name that I do think you need to keep an eye on, though, is the BYU coach and former player Mark Pope. Apparently, he has a lot of support for that job, and maybe they'll want to bring somebody home to kind of mama's calling and take him back over.
Yeah, I would imagine so. It would be interesting to see what they do with the final pick. You know, I know that there's always different stories out there, but let's say this, and let's scare everybody in
town. Right, let's play Jacob's favorite game, the what if game.
In town. Scare everybody in town real quick. Let's say you get something like Bruce Pearl says, you know, I'm done with this. I'm going up to take the Kentucky job. Let's say that happens to Auburn. Where do you go if you're Auburn then?
Well, that'd be a terrible shakeout of the dominoes falling, right? I mean, it starts with the coach leaving for SMU, then USC opening. Musselman's been wanting out of Arkansas. He jumps. For some reason, I guess Calipari's been wanting out of Kentucky because he's willing to go to Arkansas, which is not even close to the same caliber job of Kentucky. Good job, but not that good. And then all of a sudden, Bruce Pearl, breaking news, Pearl to Kentucky, and Auburn fans' heads explode. What does Auburn do at that point? What would you do, Jack? What would I do? I promise the first thing I'd do is call Buzz Williams, Texas A&M.
I like that. I really like that a lot.
I'd offer him anything he wants.
Yeah.
Bring it on, Buzz.
I like that a lot.
I think he'd be a good fit here. Obviously, Todd Golden would be a name that's being bounced around. Wouldn't be shocked if Kentucky was secretly trying to talk to him. That guy's an excellent coach. You've heard a lot of people talk about Bucky McMillan from Samford. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of old-school Auburn fans that are no-go on that hire. Think he's got too much Alabama in him. I don't know, man. You know, you hate to go there and say what if, but if Kentucky's going to come take your man, the University of Kentucky, one of these – top blue blood, you know what programs. I mean, they are basically it, along with Kansas and North Carolina and Duke and now UConn.
Yep.
Kentucky, the big blues come to take your man. You better load up for bear and replace him with somebody big.
I think you're right. Now, I don't think that's anywhere near happening, obviously. But it's just, you know, we're playing the what if game here. We're playing Jacob's favorite game, like you mentioned. So. But I do think that, you know, a name like Todd Golden is probably where you'd look. But I think you're right. I almost wonder if Kentucky is talking to a guy like that right now, mm-hmm. a younger guy who they view that they can have around for a long time. You know, do you think maybe if Golden were to get that job and then, you know, years down the line, Auburn's trying to get Golden back. Well, are you giving up the Kentucky job to come to Auburn at that point? I mean, you don't know. It's an odd shakeout of events that can happen. And again, I'm not saying any of this is going to happen or has happened. It's just interesting to think about the possibilities of it.
I kind of like that coach out at Kansas State.
Yeah.
Jerome Tang.
Yep.
You know, and I like the Mark Pope guy from BYU. He's gotten them in back-to-back tournaments. He's a good coach. I can't quite recall the coach's name at Utah State right now. He's obviously been doing a good job. These are some of the more kind of underrated names, I think, that are out there that will be circulating when this job domino thing finally settles out. But I tell you what, though, it would be our man Lonnie in Lochapoca would probably get a big old – second helping of what he likes to describe a plate of jabbaque if Kentucky were to come down here and take Bruce Pearl after us getting bounced by Yale in the first round.
It'd be a bad circumstance, or I guess it'd be a bad couple of days of circumstances there.
It'd be radio gold.
Oh, it'd be great.
Just open up the phone lines and we'll step outside and y'all can have at it.
But the good thing is we're not telling you anything's happened like that. That's just that's a little game we like to play here on the Line.
That's just a little sports talk radio. Speaking of which, after the break, Jacob Hillman with the Auburn Sports Network will be with us. Give us a ring after that. Phone lines will be open around 345-334-321-1390.
Jacob Goins
on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Welcome back to On the Line. I'm Uncle T-Bone here with special guest Jack Hudden. And we've got another special guest from the Auburn Sports Network every Monday at 3:30, Jacob Hillman. Jacob, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, T-Bone. Happy to join you and Jack today and get this week off to a good start after kind of a busy and wild weekend. And that also included, and I hate that he's not here, but Jacob Goins taking home an Abby for best sportscaster in the state of Alabama. That's a huge deal. And yep, congrats to Jacob, as well as the Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck for taking home best sports show.
Oh, wow. Multiple award winners here over at the Auburn Network. That's what we do, Jacob, just talent galore. And so, speaking of talent, we saw some serious talent over there upgraded at 8A. Start with number 8, Cam Coleman. He really is the headline story of 8A and maybe moving into the 2024 football season.
Yeah, he really is. And we knew what to expect from the freshman wide receiver out of Phenix City going into this this 8A scrimmage, and he delivered. He over-delivered, as a matter of fact, and it really is something different that we haven't seen from an Auburn receiver in quite some time. So obviously, that's not to discredit in any Auburn wide receiver over the past 20 or so years, but when you haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver this century and you see Cam Coleman go out and make plays like that, just as a true freshman, you start to think about bigger and better things out of the Auburn receiver room. And obviously, that's he's part of the Freeze Four. Bryce Kane got some action in as well. And then later this summer, you're going to see Perry Thompson as well as Malcolm Simmons join the program and the team and get their reps in. So obviously, it's good that you have two of those guys already on campus and getting to work in with that quarterback room that's already here and working its way to improving a little bit. But it really was just incredible to see him go out and do all of that. I think that the entire wide receiver room looked a little bit better. Robert Lewis, he looked really solid. Obviously, the transfer from Georgia State, he got a lot of targets and made the most of it. And I thought Camden Brown, he was out there making some plays as well. And hopefully he can finally break through in the regular season and do what we know he's capable of.
Jacob, it's likely that the quarterback controversy, if there is one, is going to come down to who's QB number 2 this year. And that doesn't seem to be really settled quite yet. Obviously, Peyton Thorne kind of ahead of the pack, and that seems to be what Auburn has hitched their wagon to here. Who do you see coming out in that QB 2 race? Do you see a Walker White able to jump up and grab that, or is it going to be a guy that Auburn fans are more familiar with?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I still think Holden Garner has one of the best just talented arms in this quarterback room, and he's still showing flashes of that, whether it was in the 8A game or in some of the minutes that he got over the past year. But obviously, Hank Brown, he's been raved about since that Music City Bowl performance that he had back in December, and he had some good connections with Camden Brown and the other receivers as well. Obviously, Walker White, he has the prototypical build of a great quarterback and has shown that he's got a talented arm as well so far this spring, and he looked like he was pretty comfortable out there. Obviously, he's still just a freshman, so I do think that he has the capability and he has the ability to make a push for that number 2 spot. But obviously, the experienced guys or the more experienced guys in Holden and Hank that'll hold some weight, and I do think that Holden Garner might edge out those guys. I just think when he throws the ball, it just looks a little bit different. And obviously, White and Brown still have time to grow and get a little bit better.
Jacob, on the defensive side of the ball, first I noticed all the young players and their physicality. Good-looking young players from the Riddick kid at linebacker. Malik Blockton really stood out to me with his size. T.J. Lindsey, Jamonte Waller, D.J. Barber. I'm just going to go ahead and nickname this defense the Young Turks. It's a testament to their talent, but it's also a testament that they're going to get so much playing time, and I notice them to how deficient the roster was at Auburn when Hugh Freeze took over.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Amaris Williams is another name I'll add to the list you mentioned. And just those guys, they seem like they're ready to go. They're ready to play in a game. D.J. Durkin, obviously, the new Auburn defensive coordinator, alongside Charles Kelly, I think that they've got these guys a little further ahead than maybe it was last year, and that's something to say about this class that's come in, is that they're more ready for showtime and game time. And I also think some of the transfers you brought in are going to be key, specifically Antonio Kite, as well as the defensive MVP on Saturday, Jaron Thompson. Those guys are going to be obviously big factors in the defensive backfield, which is somewhat of a question mark going into this year because of the inexperience. That, you know, that's kind of the opposite of where we were going into last season, where that was the one area that you weren't concerned about at all because of Jalen Smith, because of DJ James, Nehemiah Pritchett, and other names. This year, Keontae Scott is really the only guy that you know for sure is a guy that you can rely on and is going to be a solid starter. Everyone else, obviously, we know they're talented, but have not seen them so far this year. But I'll say that I was impressed by them this past weekend, the defensive backfield, as well as those young players that you mentioned.
Jacob, let's throw it over to the Diamond now. Obviously, Auburn baseball, they get the win over number 4 Tennessee on Friday, but then, unfortunately, get run ruled the next 2 days. What'd you see over at Plainsman Park? Were you able to get over there for Saturday's game?
Yeah, it was, yeah, obviously, right as soon as the A-Day game ended, I walked into the ballpark in the middle of the first inning for that Saturday game. And obviously, those three games, that Saturday game against Arkansas, the Friday game against Tennessee, as well as the Saturday game against the Volunteers, all three of those games, we'll start with the big positive, is they were record-setting attendance games. Auburn, it was 5,566 on Saturday, which is ultimately ended up being the largest attended game in Plainsman Park history. But, yeah, the Auburn family flocked to Plainsman Park so far this year and will continue to do so. But, yeah, I thought Friday night that the team had taken a bit of a turn, especially the pitching staff, because the bullpen after those first two innings on Friday night was lights out. John Armstrong had just an incredible performance in that one going. I think he threw, what, it was 4 innings? And we haven't seen him throw as many pitches that he did on Friday night. I think he had 55. It was a season high. And it was just a really, really solid outing from him, and as well as other guys on that night. Carson Myers had a great outing in that game, and it really was something I thought, all right, this will be the time for them to make the turn and have a good weekend where you have a chance to win the series. And obviously Tennessee's offense is one of the elite in the country, and I think they've scored the second most runs or hit the second most home runs in Division I baseball. So it really is a powerful offense that's tough to defend against, but obviously getting run ruled 2 games in a row is not how you want it to go. You at least want it to show some fight in those games. And obviously I think the Auburn offense is still capable to be a winning team in this conference, but now it doesn't get any easier. Now you've got the SEC leader coming to Plainsman Park in number 8 Kentucky, who's only lost one conference game this year. So you got to stay level headed and get ready for another tough weekend.
Yeah, speaking with Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network, you mentioned it. Kentucky comes to town for a 3-game set that'll begin on Thursday. 11-1 in the conference, leading the Eastern Division for the last year that they'll have divisions. What should Auburn fans expect from the Wildcats? Are they going to be like Tennessee and big bruisers at the plate, or do they play a little bit more sophisticated type of ball where they try and small ball you around and beat you with pitching?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. This past weekend against Alabama, that they swept, and I'll tell you what, that was a pretty good sweep by Kentucky over the Crimson Tide. Alabama, a pretty solid ball club this year. I don't expect them to get swept in very many series this season. But yeah, they can certainly hit the ball a long way and do a little bit of what Tennessee does, but they are a little bit more traditional style, and I think that the pitching for them is going to be the key, because again, this Auburn offense is good enough to win in the SEC, and this upcoming weekend, I wouldn't expect to see the runs that Tennessee was able to put up against Auburn this past weekend. But it's certainly something that to keep an eye on as far as offensive goes for Kentucky, because you're going to need more performances like you did on Friday night against the Wildcats, because I think at this point you're not. I don't want to say you need, it's a must-win series for Auburn, but you're getting to that point in the season where you've got to find wins somewhere. Your RPI looks pretty good. I think in the top 30 right now.
29th overall. Yeah, I'm just pulling that up, Jacob.
Exactly. So you're still alive in that sense. The analytics don't hate you. You've got a chance if you can go on a bit of a run. So, and we keep saying that the schedule doesn't get any easier, but it does after this week, obviously. You have just faced the toughest gauntlet you could possibly face in the SEC, and that continues this week. But then after that, you do face some teams that have struggled a little bit so far in SEC play, in LSU, in Mississippi State, as well as Ole Miss. So I think right here is a great weekend where you have an opportunity at home, close out an 8-game homestand, and need to do it with a couple of wins, I think, to really give yourself a chance as we move into the later parts of April and into May.
Just a couple more minutes here with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Jacob, let's transition over to the hardwood. Not an Auburn-centric question, but Who you got tonight? UConn and Purdue going at it. A couple of, not blue bloods per se, but, boy, there are a couple of new bloods that have really come on the last few years. Who you got?
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's hard for me to pick against Dan Hurley and that UConn team. They've been so dominant over these last 2 years in tournament play. Obviously, the whole talk is how they've dominated every single game that they've played. And I don't know. I don't know if I expect it to be similar tonight against Purdue. I do think that this Boilermaker ball club is a really solid one. They've earned their way into this national championship. Zach Edey, obviously, the national player of the year for the second consecutive year. And I do think that Purdue will make this a game. I do think it'll be close. It'll come down to the final minutes, but I also wouldn't be surprised if in the last 2 minutes it turns into just Connecticut making its free throws and winning by 5 or 6. It might not come down to the last possession, but I do think it will be in question, the game, as far as the result goes, over the last 5 minutes.
Jacob, tell everybody else what's going on the Plains this week and how everybody can follow you to see what is happening over at Auburn.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU, as well as the Auburn Sports Network at AU Sports Network. Tuesday night will be kind of a doubleheader on the diamond as Auburn softball's Wednesday matchup with UAB got moved up to tomorrow. So Auburn baseball will host Alabama State at 6 Central at Plainsman Park. Andy Burch and Brad Law will have the call on Wings 94.3, as well as the Auburn Tigers app. And then softball will host UAB at the same time. J.J. Jackson will have the call on the Auburn Tigers app as well. And then this weekend, Auburn baseball hosts Kentucky at Plainsman Park Thursday through Saturday. And then Auburn softball travels down to LSU for a Friday through Sunday series. Britt Bowen will have the call on the Auburn Sports Network for that one. And then we're also starting to get into some postseason action for spring sports as women's golf will go to Bel Air, Florida at Pelican Golf Club for the SEC championship. So we're getting into that time of year where spring sports are starting to see their postseasons get started, and the weather, you can't beat it today. Obviously, just across campus, it was nice to see everyone out. Obviously, trying to take a look at the eclipse, so I don't know if you guys went and saw it, but that was a cool little thing today.
Yeah, you could tell from the studio window outside that it definitely got darker. I haven't tried to look at one of those things since I was a kid, Jacob, and I had like one of those Captain Crunch boxes with the aluminum foil on it and about burned out my retina. So I took a pass, but it looked pretty cool to me. Jacob Hillman, the Auburn Sports Network, thank you so much, Jacob. We will see you next Monday, and we appreciate the updates, buddy.
Always appreciate the time. War Eagle.
War Eagle, that was Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. A lot going on the Plains and postseason play beginning for spring sports. Jack, the end of the year is approaching quickly, man. School will be out for summer here soon.
It's coming up. Yeah, I'm gonna have to figure out what I'm doing for summer break.
Yeah, man. Sounds like, why don't you come in here and help host the show with us? You're more than welcome to.
Unfortunately, don't get many of those in the working world. However, a big time coming up for Auburn. Hopefully, you got a few teams in the postseason when we turn the book to this summer.
Well, they better get going this weekend in baseball. I'm going to have to slightly disagree with my friend Jacob Hillman. I think it's do or die now, and this season could come to a screeching halt once and for all. They can't get it past Kentucky. We're going to take our last break of the day. Give us a ring. Phone lines are still open. A few minutes left to get in. Give us your pick for the championship game, and we'll do ours on the line, ESPN Radio 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Welcome back to On the Line as we wrap things up on this Solar Eclipse Monday. Hope you got outside and took a look at the, not totality of it, but partial eclipse here on the plains. And Jack, it's been a lot of fun today, my man. I appreciate you coming in and helping out me and intern Alan. And I want to get your thoughts on the big game tonight, the national championship for men's basketball. The season is here. It is finished, and this is it.
Man, I have enjoyed it today as well. Yeah, and definitely big thanks to Alan and obviously Jacob for letting me come and fill in today. You know, I think talking about the game tonight, I think you got a couple of matchups that you got to watch. The first of which is obviously is going to be Zach Edey and Donovan Klingon. What does that matchup look like in the post? But then I also think you got a couple of guard matchups that I think are going to be interesting. Braden Smith for Purdue has been a guy that has seemingly been there for 28 years. And most of the time when they get in big games, that's their main guard that they like to go to. So what does it look like when he gets paired up against a Stephon Castle tonight, maybe a Tristan Newton? What does that look like in late game scenarios? I think UConn's got the edge in this. I think UConn has been the team all year that they've been putting teams away, even that are, you know, top 10 caliber teams. And so I'm going to pick the Huskies tonight. I'm going with Connecticut. I think that Klingon has a good enough game to keep Edey off the boards, enough for their guards to really go to work. I think Castle, I think Newton, I think Spencer, I think all those guards have a really nice evening. I think Diarra gives you enough off the bench to be able to close this one out. I actually think I've got Connecticut by it's somewhere between 7 and 10 points. I think that they put a nice little cushion there at the end.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I got the Huskies winning tonight 80-70. They pull away late, just suffocate Purdue like they do just about every team, including Alabama on Saturday night. The Cam Spencer kid, we didn't really get a chance to dive into the Alabama-UConn game with as much stuff that was going on the plains this weekend we needed to discuss today. But that Cam Spencer game, a kid, he's a transfer from Rutgers, and he looks harmless, right? You know, he doesn't look like this guy is just going to come out and ball. But he's a perfect example of what UConn has, and that's no weaknesses on the court at any time.
Yeah.
I mean, he single-handedly out-rebound Alabama in that first half and really gave UConn enough second chances to not let Alabama pull away, because Alabama was shooting red hot.
Right.
Kid has 8 rebounds, 4 assists, and 14 quiet points. A very solid game for Cam Spencer. And like I said, they just don't have any weaknesses out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's been a clinic most of the year watching UConn. I mean, we talked about their sets earlier that they run. They dish out assists at a very high rate, but they also rebound the ball well. They shoot the ball well. They play defense very well. I mean, every metric points towards UConn being the favorite in this game. And so I think that's why I got them.
Yeah, Connecticut 36-3 on the year, looking to go back-to-back national champion. I mean, just to win a national championship in college basketball is hard, but to go back-to-back, Jack?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I think the other thing with it is, you know, how often, and this is something that Alan brought up earlier, how often do you get a game in basketball that's chalk for a national championship? I mean, these have seemed like the two teams that have been barreling towards each other all year. You don't often get that in the national championship for basketball due to the NCAA tournament format.
Well, I mean, like I said earlier, if you get to the Final Four and you're not one of these blue blood teams, and quite frankly, Purdue's not one of them, you got to take care of business, because getting there is one thing. Getting back for a team that's not elite or an elite program over time is much more difficult. And the further Auburn gets away from 2019, it was kind of my warning to Alabama, you better get there next year and strike while the iron's hot, because if you don't, each year you get away from it, it gets harder and harder to get to.
I would tend to agree with that, and I think that Auburn has seen that happen. You know, back in 2020, it was more so that Auburn was doing actually pretty well from coming back from
the
Final
Four. They were doing everything they
needed to do. So they were trending in the right way.
To get amped up to make a deep run in that NCAA tournament. That was a solid team. In circumstance, sometimes if somebody gets hurt, someone takes a gun to someone that gets shot. I don't know. Anything can happen in this basketball world.
I think you're right. I think that there are multiple things that have happened in the previous few years that obviously point their way towards Alabama having some trouble getting back this year, but, you know, definitely a good season.
You don't ever know. Well, we're going to wrap it up. Been a great time. Thank you, Jack. Thank you,
I've enjoyed it,
Alan.
Man.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Tonight, Connecticut, -6.5 Purdue for the national championship in basketball. Jacob Goins will be back from Augusta tomorrow. This has been Uncle T-Bone on the line, 106.7 ESPN Radio.